Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in Nick and Luca from the alternative indie rock band Rona. Gentlemen, yes, welcome.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm so glad you guys could come down. Stoked to have you here. I know Seth is a big fan of your music and got to see you recently with Mustard Service.
Yep.
Said that was a great time. So I got a chance to check out your music. I really dug it. So I got a lot of things I'm curious about with the last record that you put out. But I know you formed sometime around 2019-ish, right?
So we did form like officially and start releasing music under the name Rona in 2019, but we had played with each other since like high school, early high school, like 2015, 2016.
Okay, so rewind me back to that time while you guys start making music individually and how you start coming together, making your way to being Rona.
Yeah, so I mean, all of us have been lifelong musicians, since like, 8, 9, 10, 11, that age, kind of your formative years when you're figuring out what it is that you like to do. Mm-hmm. So all of us have that, background in just being the kid that just wants to pick up the guitar or the drums or the bass, whatever it is, and just going in for it and kind of thinking like, this is my thing. This is what I'm going to do. We all started meeting back in high school. Actually, middle school for me, with meeting our bass player, Andres. And first time I ever met him, we were playing music that same day.
Nice.
So he had this metal band called Apnea, and I had this like shitty punk rock band, and it was like, hey man, come open up, for our show down in, the local bar in Tarpon Springs, Neptune Lounge, and just like, let's make it fun. And at the time it was me and another drummer, and Andres has always been like the community's bass player. Yeah. There's not a lot of them out there. So it's like, hey, let's just find who we can, throw him in. So he came in and we kind of just started jamming the first day. And it was like, let's, do something real fun. Just a quick like 15, 20 minute set just to get the show rolling. Mm. But one thing led to another. We stayed in touch and I kept going out to his like hardcore metal shows and all that. And sometime in like 2016, 2017... by going to those hardcore shows, that really tight-knit DIY scene, I met our other guitarist, Austin Birdie, and him and I started playing music that wasn't like anything heavy. It was kind of our way of rebelling in that music scene, finding something that was a little different. And we started this band called Greenhaven. From there, change of members and all that, we ended up grabbing Luca, who is, the Well, not really much of the baby of the band anymore.
I was still at the time. Yeah.
He was at the time.
I had a lot of learning to do and thankfully figured it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got him on in. And
was that your first band?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, they were the first people that I had ever like played music with live. And they kind of introduced me to live music in general through that same like hardcore music scene. And I thought it was so sick. So yeah, after that, I was just like, this is what I want to do. And at some point they needed that drummer and I just hopped in and.
Yeah. We kind of beat him in the shape. He always had it in him because he's the third generation drummer of the family.
Yeah. Right? My grandfather and my father are both drummers and my great uncle.
Wow. So, crazy.
Yeah. There's a lot of us.
So
you got drumming in the blood for real.
A lot of drumming in the genealogy there. So we took him along. And we're like, all right, well, he had it in him. We just sat there and for like months on end. He like learned all of our songs and crazy. Just kind of beat it into him. And we started writing some stuff. Eventually, though, that band kind of broke apart a little bit, some change of members and stuff, and we ended up forming Rona together and just started working on a record and then went to Savannah and recorded our first album in like 10 days and just made it like, with the mentality of let's just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks and see kind of what we can create as a group with, just keeping like the mentality of like, let's keep it fun. Let's keep it like no, boxes, nothing, just have fun with it. And that is pretty much how we got together. And
so as the one band you were in starts to fall apart, what are you thinking? Are you thinking to yourself, oh shit, this isn't what I want? Or was it almost the feeling that, wait a minute, now we might be liberated?
It was hard because we were all really close friends, and really what ended up happening is we had one of our really good friends who, no bad blood, we still love him, he's still a brother to us,
right.
His name's Justin, and he was going to Italy, I think it was.
Yeah, I was like study abroad for
like,
a couple months.
So he was there for like 2-3 months, and it was just kind of like, oh, well, we're writing all these new songs and we want to keep this thing moving.
Ah, gotcha.
So let's just, you know, let's try to keep this thing going, you know, and just see what happens. And, you know, we're still in our bedroom and we have like 10, 15 songs and stuff that we're running through.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, well, we need a singer. So what are we going to do? And we kind of just like looked at each other like, well, you know, Luke and I can take it on. Let's just try it. Not even like we can sing. Let's just try it and see what happens. And
right.
it felt good. Like it felt right. And we're like, okay, well, this isn't really the same band anymore. So it just kind of ended up falling into that kind of position as instrumentalist, moving into a different part of the, you know, role to take on in the band.
So the four of you that are Rona now were in that previous band just sans one member?
Yeah, exactly. And then we actually just added in, funny enough, the brother of that vocalist, John. He's in doing some keys and extra guitar and all that, and some backup vocals now too. We've all been, I mean, good friends for the longest time, and he's actually the reason why Andres, our bass player, even picked up the bass to begin with, because he was in that metal band with Andres, and actually pretty much any band Andres has been in, John has been a part of. So we kind of just were like, all right, man, well, you know, we need someone else now, so you're in.
Yeah, the circle starts to come together.
It's like, all right.
Okay, so one thing I wanted to kind of wait to ask about this one a little bit, but one thing I noticed when I was watching some of your live footage is that you do sing primarily a lot, both of you at the same time, always. And your drumming, you sing quite a lot for a drummer. How other than the necessity of, hey, I don't know if we're going to add somebody else, did you get to doing that? Because I feel like that the way you handle the vocals is a unique aspect to your band.
I think we are kind of trying to move into a place where we can have like more singular vocals that just sound good on their own. Off the bat, it was kind of like, okay, we've never done this before, so we're trying to like layer things and make things, you know, sound rich and full. And neither of us were like as confident with vocalizing as we are now.
Right.
So definitely taking on different forms of that moving forward, but it was definitely a necessity thing. Like, yeah, hey, we're going to try to do this. But I also kind of knew that I could sing a little bit, and I was just like, I'm going to learn it and we're going to do it. So yeah, it just happened.
I felt like it was one of those things where it was like, well, I'm nervous to do it, you're nervous to do it, let's just try to both lift each other up and get each other out of our shell a little bit. And
smart,
you know,
two voices is better than one.
Yeah, let's hide behind each other a little bit, you know.
Well, your voices blend really well together. I think it's a unique aspect of your music. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Okay, so when you get into Rona and you've got these 10, 15 songs that you're still kicking around with and you don't want to let them, you know, go to the wayside, take me back to the time when you're like, okay, we're going to go record these in this 10 days of banging this out. What was that like?
Man, it's a little fuzzy for me. My memory's
always
shot.
That was a wild time. That was a really interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was 19 at the time. I'm 25 now. And I just kind of remember, for like a whole summer, we were just jamming and just figuring out new songs. And, you know, being 19, like, it's such a transitional period in your life.
Right.
You know, lots going on. You're developing mentally so much more. Like, I feel like that age range of like 18 to 22, so much changes in your mind.
That's Whirlwind City.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we were all just kind of like so focused on like that being our anchor through that time period in our life of just like, let's just write music. And we found this cool studio that was right in the heart of downtown Savannah. And it just looked like a lot of fun just to, hey, let's see what we can do with how much time we can afford. And I think it was one of those things where you're just flying by the seat of your pants, you know?
Yeah.
Just go for it.
You had this material well rehearsed and under your feet pretty well before you went to record it?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, definitely for the most part. But there was so much, like, the thing that was cool about the studio was that there's just so much extra instruments, like, laying around and tools that we don't usually have at our side that it was like, oh, let's, like, one of the engineers that helped us, Sean Kelly, he's, like, really good at accordion. And he's like, hey, let's throw accordion on this part. We're like, what? Like, okay, sure. Yeah, let's do it.
And vocal harmonies.
Yeah, and like vocal harmonies, like six different vocals, like ad-libbing at the same time in certain songs, like kind of Beach Boys kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Just weird background stuff. But yeah, and then he would take like the accordion or something and he would like put it through like some crazy plugin that would make it sound like a synthesizer. And we're like, dude, that is not something I would ever do if I'm sitting in my bedroom. Like, that is beyond me, you know, and to have like people that you can kind of that you've never really worked with before and you're just meeting for the first time and you just kind of interact creatively and have fun with it. It definitely, you know, opens the door for things you would never personally think of or that comes straight from you.
Yeah. You know? Amen to that. And that can be really hard for some artists to do. How do you or what things do you think help you guys be open minded to let those things happen? Not getting precious about stuff or saying, hey, we didn't write an accordion. We don't want an accordion.
Yeah. Well, I feel like your ideas are never really your ideas. I think it's more or less, you know, the universe, whatever energy that it is that you're grabbing onto at the time is just channeling it into you. Mm. And it's just like, hey, this is, you know, here's the idea. Have fun with it, you know. But I feel like, Luca, you probably have some perspective on that too, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've never been super protective over ideas like that. Yeah. It's always like, the birth of the idea is cool, but it can go any number of ways after that. And just being open to what other people have to say only really makes it better because you're, you know, if you close it off at that original birth of the idea, you don't get any of the growth that could happen from other people's perspectives.
Sometimes I will say, though, in certain aspects where there's something that's really special, like, and it's really rare. I feel like it's only ever been like a couple songs where it's like, oh, lightning in a bottle was captured. Like, let's try to make this what it is. But
we're normally open about that, too, though. Like, if that happens, it's like, oh, that's the one.
That's it. You know, if the idea presents itself and it's just like there, all right, we don't need to really mess with that anymore than, you know, what happened when it was created. Like, let's leave it at that. Let's, you know, appreciate what we got.
Yeah, agreed. What is that something that you had, for want of a better way of putting it, creative instinct to allow to happen in the first place? Or was that something you learned over time?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like a little bit of both, you know, like being able to keep your hands off on something.
You mean like making the decision whether it is necessary to keep it or not? Okay. No, I think that's pretty natural, honestly.
Yeah.
Because we're all really good friends. We're kind of like brothers at this point, so wavelength wise like we're all kind of on the same level for the most part. It's very rare that we butt heads on ideas or we're like, no, I don't want to see you try that. Like it's pretty much always like, yeah, go for it. So
there's definitely an instinct though where it's like, oh, that idea, you know, something calls for this. Like sometimes we'll be jamming out an idea or something and, you know, maybe Luca has like a certain instinct to be like, hey, we should try to like halftime this part or something, or you know, just like simple things like that, or even like I remember going back to the first record that we made. There's a song on there called Rosewater, and that is like the song we always end our sets with now. It's just this really big, like 7-minute song that we never thought like, oh yeah, we're gonna make a 7-minute song because who the fuck does that nowadays? You know,
well, we had a band in here a couple weeks ago with a 40-minute track.
Oh my god!
Shout out, Cruel Curses.
Let's just go. Dark Side of the Moon at that point.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway, sorry, I digress.
No, that's okay. But yeah, no, it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, especially
tall order.
Yeah, in a band in our genre, it's like, unfortunately, with the way that streaming has turned the landscape of music into now, or what it has turned it into. You know, the attention span of so many listeners aren't going to be like, yeah, let's go listen to a 7-minute song. We love this.
Right.
The great part's right at the very end.
Just get through the first 4 minutes, bro. I promise. Like,
the drop's coming.
Yeah. But I always remember like when we were first making that song, and it's the memory that always comes to me whenever we're playing it on stage. It's just in my old bedroom in my parents' house, you know, being 18 years old, writing this music. And I remember we had this first half of the song done. It was probably our third time running through it. Mm-hmm. And Luca just goes into this really cool drum beat, like right at the end. And it was like, oh, you're onto something. Like, let's grab onto that. Like, he was just like on a rocket ship. And we're like, okay, yeah, we're just going to, you know, grab on and go for it.
Love that.
And he took this whole vibe into something else, which then made me find this like weird key change, like chord progression to throw over it. And then just kind of built into this whole thing, and you know, one thing led to another, and it's got this whole ambient section now that birthed out of it, going into like this big drop, and it really is something that like wouldn't be anything you would really find sitting at a computer or something, or sitting down with an acoustic guitar trying to write.
Right.
It's just one of those things that just happened.
Everybody was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody was present in the room and allowed themselves to kind of flow with the idea.
Amen to that. So then that begs the question, when you write stuff, do you typically write out of jams? You sit in the room and play together and feed off each other, or do you come with bits and pieces or full songs or? How do you approach writing?
It's kind of developed to where it's a mixture of both being in person, like when we're at practice or something like that, we'll jam. And sometimes if somebody has an idea, like Nick has done a lot of the writing for the most recent stuff in, you know, in the computer, but then we'll either jam on it in person and kind of morph it that way.
Right.
Or honestly, with some of those ideas, going back to the like creative instinct things, those were ideas where we just walked into the room and it was like, oh, that's something right there. So yeah. It can happen both ways, but it definitely develops differently based on how you're, you know, how you're starting with the idea.
Yeah, I especially think with like, as of recent with like the new record we've been working on, the skill of like sitting down at a computer is something that, and writing a song has been something that we had to develop.
Right.
That's definitely one of those where, you know, your engineering technical skills and all that is something that you have to get to the point where the idea that you have isn't getting prohibited because you're not able to keep the natural flow or like keep up the pace of what you're trying to do in the computer as well. So it's kind of one, you know, one goes with the other. But at the end of the day, I think the perspective of especially this new record was no matter how the song's being written or, you know, what it turns into, we really want to keep it in the vibe of like you could strip everything back and it could be just you with an acoustic guitar performing it.
Ah.
Trying to really approach it with like more of a songwriting perspective, because I feel like our music in the past has struggled to really have that sort of quality to it. You know, trying to remove all those bells and whistles and the song's kind of hard to feel out or have as, you know, a performance with just that one key thing. And I feel like this time around, we've really tried to keep that focus no matter how the song was written.
Okay. Well, so in this case, do you want to record something that only contains elements that you can reproduce live? Or is it just more that the core elements are the backbone of it, regardless of any of the ancillary shit?
I think the latter.
Yeah.
I think the latter more. I mean, we definitely do like to have the perspective of like, you know, let's not be too unrealistic about what we can do live. Like, you know, we don't want to throw in a bunch of instrumentation, like, you know, trumpets and saxophones or things like that, where it's like none of us know how to play that.
Right.
There's nobody that we're hiring.
Doesn't really fit. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like there's nobody that we're hiring that can come onto stage and do that for every show that we go play. You know, and we have to be flexible as a band because it's not like, you know, we're the biggest band in the world or anything. You know, we're playing various types of stages from like, you know, a house show to, you know, small clubs to maybe, you know, opening up at like House of Blues or something like that. Like it's all different stages. So we really have to be able to adapt and keep it grounded at the same time.
Smart.
Mm-hmm.
So take me back a little bit then to when you get done recording this first record and you start moving along. Now you're starting to progress to some of these things you're getting into today. What was the middle ground like where you're trying to find your footing, you know, maybe trying to write some more song focused things? What was the road like before you got there?
That's a good question. Try to think about it in the sense like I guess we adapted with kind of finding the audience and vibing with the shows and the audience that we were playing in front of and starting to create.
Okay.
I feel like that really helped us find ourselves a little bit more as songwriters. Because you kind of see what connects well with, you know, who you're playing to,
mm-hmm.
but also what feels good for you to play live.
Ah.
And I feel like that really shapes it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want to be like, you know, too obsessive with like, oh, you know, people have to like this. People, you know, this needs to work. Obviously, you're a musician. You want your music to sound good, but you want to make it for yourself at the end of the day.
Right.
But you also want to make it to where it's like, this feels good to play in front of people. And not just in front of people, but play like with the crowd, you know, to not disconnect that, you know, that thread that you have with an audience member or, you know, just being able to really attach yourself with people in a room. Because I feel like you go up there and, you know, you're connecting with people at a different level as, you know, any type of performer, whether you're like, you know, a comedian or, you know, a musician, anything of those kind of things, you know.
I will also say, like, post first record, like, after we put it out, we didn't get a whole lot of time to play on it because it was, like, release and then, yeah. like, short tours and then COVID.
Oh.
So that happened.
Forgot about that.
And then it was...
trying like, to block that out of my mind. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because we got, like, just enough time playing on that music our first studio record, you know, like you wrote all the music, you added stuff to it, you were excited about it, but then you find out all these things like, oh, well, this isn't like exactly comfortable in the way that I would like to perform it, or like, yeah, I would have done this differently next time around. And then it was like, oh, we play on it for like 2-3 months and now we're locked in for like a year. So there was all this practice that came after that, kind of with the intent of, you know, like trying to find what is comfortable. And I think a lot of writing also happened during that period of time. And by the time we were ready to break back out and play again, we were pretty much already like ready to do like new music. Like it just kind of developed in that
so
way.
So the COVID time worked out well for you in a way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at least in terms of music and having time to like go over things and not really stress about like deadlines.
Grow as musicians and experiment creatively. And also, I mean, going back to like the engineering thing and trying to be, you know, keep up the pace with, you know, your technical skills so that you can get your artistic ideas onto that canvas.
Right.
That was a huge thing for us. Like we had so much time to figure that out and become to, you know, get to the point where we're able to do that efficiently. You know, because I mean at
that
point,
probably like the hard start of it for you. I knew we were all kind of messing with it, but I don't know, for like, especially like me and you at that point, that was like, oh, we should really get good at this. Cause
Yeah. I mean, there was a point where, you know, the first like 3 months, nobody knew what the hell we were dealing with. So, you know, 2-3 months, we're not together at all. And it's like, well, you know, we want to keep this thing moving. Like we want to keep writing, you know.
Yeah. Especially since you were coming off of some momentum.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, being the age we were still, it was like, I feel like I said, with that 18 to 22 kind of age, it's like you're kind of doing things like you have to do this or like it's the end of the fucking world, you know? Yeah. And at that point, it kind of did feel a little bit like the end of the world. So maybe we were like, well, let's just fucking do as much as we can, you know?
Yeah, screw it.
So, yeah. But it worked out for the best with getting to where we were because with like the new record that we did, the guy who we record with, Austin Coop, he moved out to L.A., so we still want to work with him because he feels like another member for us at this point. We've known him for so long and worked with him in different projects and all. And just creatively, it works so well. Like he feels like that extra person that we need and such an unbiased opinion in what we create that it's really respected to be like, oh, yeah, you know, like what to change for this like little, even if it's like the littlest thing, like a transition in a song or, you know, turnaround or, you know, this one chord in the chorus or something just to change it. It really affects the way that the song feels.
Right.
That's okay. I love how I said I knew how microphones work too. And I clearly moved that one where it fell.
That's all right.
Nice.
Yeah.
We won't tell anyone.
Yeah. Where was I going? Was I talking about Coop?
Austin.
Like, knowing what we're looking for and being able to reproduce it pretty accurately. And
he ended up moving out to LA.
Right.
But we still want to work with him. So we ended up doing this whole new record all through like Zoom sessions, which was really cool because he was able to still do like the producer part of things and be there and be that opinion and listen through everything that we're doing and help us develop the ideas. But all the engineering aspects really were up to us. Like we had to, you know, place the mics and, you know, do all the work, like really make sure like the product that we're getting at the base level sounded good.
Right.
From a technical perspective.
Right. We were like, otherwise those ideas won't translate.
No. Yeah. It would have been cool to have them in the room, but we've gotten good enough to kind of like handle it. And we had some help through parts of it, which was good. But yeah.
Thankfully, him and I work at a audio lighting video production place. So we had a lot of gear at our expense to kind of, you know, hey, can we borrow this for a couple weeks? And, you know, things we can never afford on our own dime, but
help from friends too that are more knowledgeable, stuff like that. Definitely a lot of input.
People with much more experience, and as at least especially with drums.
Yeah,
that's the trickiest part.
Yeah,
that's beyond me. I'm still like, I'm not touching that shit.
Yeah, that's where you got to start getting into. Do you hear phasing in the toms?
Yeah,
And then we've all gone into a nightmare zone.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yeah. No,
sometimes you like the nightmare zone. It's okay.
Yeah. It's about getting through it.
Yeah,
sometimes there's some cool things that you can get doing unconventional sounds, though. You know, unconventional methods.
Oh, for real.
You get some cool shit out of it, you know?
For real.
Not everything has to be too pretty, but thankfully the drums was a breeze. He knocked it out in 4 days.
It was 13? Did we do 13 14, or 12?
No, we 14. Did 14 songs.
Yeah, 14 songs in 3 days.
14 songs in three days. That's right, because the fourth day was the setup day.
Yeah.
So Yeah, he had a good time.
So when you guys track and you're working with the computer, do you do all your scratches and you're just tracking to the scratches, or do you track live and only keep the drums?
It was tracking to, like, pre-pro, basically. So like, good scratches. It, you know, everything has the feel. It's, you know, the timing's right. It's not, like, scratch, but those all end up getting replaced for, like, the better tones, reamp guitars, like, those types of things.
Actually, we did it all live tracking this time. We didn't reamp anything.
What do you mean?
Like, we didn't reamp our tones this time.
Oh,
we
did like live, playing.
Yeah,
okay.
like into the
different
end.
Tones, though. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't.
No, I see what you're saying.
You're a guitar player, but.
Sorry, that's for my technical, like, engineering brain that I've
no,
been
I like
for the
it.
Past, you know, half a year has just kicked in. I'm like, wrong term.
No.
You're wrong.
Yeah, particular. Dude, you get lost in the sauce quick.
Dude, yeah, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Since you're handling all the tracking yourself, this begs the question, and I'm guessing the answer is yes. Do you track to a click?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then do you play live with the click?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That has improved us so much more as, like, not only musicians, but just performance-wise and being able to create a show. And we're still, you know, trying to find new ways to bring it up to another level every time. But having that click and being able to follow something on a grid is something that definitely helps us out a lot.
I think
the mastermind behind all that.
I think now psychologically we're almost like more anti-click, but for the type of performance we want to do and the type of production that we would want to put on in the future if we had the resources, like, it's necessary.
I was going to say it requires it,
We want to, especially again, like with the old music, it was like very technical and we were like going ham and doing these things that weren't exactly comfortable to reproduce. Like, we really want that natural feel in there maintained somehow. So even though it's to a click, that's the goal, is still to make it feel like, you know, you're having that natural performance.
Say the click can just be your anchor. You don't have to be on top of it constantly.
Yeah. There definitely is a little bit of that psyche, though, being anti-click. Like what he's saying, because a little bit of envy of seeing like a band, in July we were opening up for this band called The Moss that's from Utah, and they had a few dates in Florida, and we were the opener for them. And there's like another support band and all, but seeing them every night, they are like just grooving. They're so tight. They're so cool. Like, just got this coolest vibe that they create every show.
Love it.
And they're not on a click. They're just up there doing the thing.
Complete
vibes, and it's so cool. It was one of the most gratifying things to be a part of and to see, you know, for, you know, four nights straight.
But, yeah, it's such a different animal.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, musicians that can just kick into that mode and like just lock into that kind of groove without any extra assistance. I'm like, that's the shit, you know.
Well, now, kind of like you said, like if you want to put on a show where you're doing the whole show thing, you kind of got to be on the click because everything's got to be timed and everything's got to be set. So, you know, it has really created a fork in the road, you know, kind of where you want to be. But there's, I think we're kind of, and maybe I would like to ask you guys how you feel about this. I think we're finally getting to the point where there's really no wrong answer. You can do being on the click and you can do just straight grooving equally well.
Yeah.
But do you guys play with any backtracks live?
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's and I'm guessing you didn't start that way.
No. Definitely not.
Actually, John, the member that we have right now, taught us how to do that at a very simple scale. And from there, especially working in production and stuff, we've learned a lot of tricks and like how to make the rigs that do that and how to do it naturally and not, you know, have a good selection of like what you actually want to throw in there. So it just feels like a sweetener, and it's not like, oh, this is like, you know, we're singing to like our vocals or something, like like you would never want to do something like that, but the goal with that still is just to
goes back to
the feel of it.
It goes back to like saying, well, you know, we want to be grounded and realistic, like what we can actually recreate live. And I feel like that's one thing that's been really nice with the new record we did with the writing, is like, okay, what can we actually backtrack that's not going to be ridiculous, you know, and still feel human and still feel real when you see us play. But, you know, what are these extra things that we can add in the song that makes it, you know, feel a little more full? You know, that's something I feel like just having the experience and working with it for a while now has kind of benefited us a lot with.
So it's really more that use it as a sweetener than the foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope that's normally how it goes, but depending on the artist.
Yeah, that's kind of why I asked, because, you know, people are kind of all over the map with that one opinion wise. You know, you can have so much backtrack running now, and no one knows who's really singing and who isn't and where everything's coming from. So, and I feel like from an outsider's perspective, it's easy to get the point of view that if you're running backtracks, they're doing all the work.
Yeah.
So I like to ask, because it can give people a different perspective that the backtrack can be there just as a, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean that it's just, you're seeing just like a fake band.
A little dash of sugar to your coffee, you know? Yeah.
If it's for the sake of reproducing the song accurately to how it would sound on the record and it's not ridiculous, then that's kind of the goal.
Well, and also, like, it's fucking rock music. Like, it's got to feel real a little bit, you know?
Yes,
you
can't.
You're telling me you don't want bass drops in the set? Like,
you know, like, you
come
want
on.
Them.
Yeah.
Come on. You want to.
Yeah. Like, I mean, all due respect to people that do, you know, genres of music where you need that, like, heavily. Like, that's what that is. But, you know, we're not going to stray away so much from the identity of who we are as musicians and as a band, where it's like, you know, we're a rock band at the end of the day, you know, whatever subgenre you want to throw in or, you know, try to label it as whatever. It's still, you know, four or five dudes with instruments in their hands, you know, kicking on some distortion and having fun.
And you guys definitely prioritize that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no doubt. I like to be loud.
Yeah.
We like to be loud for sure. I mean, I feel like is rooted because of like where we started as, you know, in high school and like fighting each other and like that hardcore scene around here. I mean, Florida is so big for the heavy music, so digging back and at least always having those roots of like, at the end of the day, you know, we cut our teeth and learn the ways of just doing a band, you know, in the realm, in that hardcore, you know, kind of family.
Yeah, that DNA don't go away.
No, man, it's hard.
Yeah, we have Andres, wish he was here right now, kind of like our front man, like does most of the like crowd interactions between songs and stuff, and he was doing that in hardcore bands at that level of energy for a bit before he hopped into a local indie band.
And
now he's screaming at all the college kids to,
so funny.
If you're not inside, get inside right now.
If you're not inside, get the fuck inside. We're like, whoa!
Can we curse? Sorry. Are we cool to curse? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fair game.
Yeah. So, it be like that, but it kind of fit perfectly in a hilarious way.
He'll like pop out with this, just this like crazy, just like throaty yell, like during like, you know, just the middle of performances, like going back to Rosewater, there's like this ambient jam section and we always try to make everyone get down and like share a moment with us and then get back up to jump and, you know, get some energy out.
Yeah.
And he just, no matter what room we're in, it doesn't matter. He's like, everybody from the front to the back, I want to see you all get the fuck down. So it's like, if he sees anybody singing, he's like, I see you, get down. We're like, whoa. It's like, dude, chill.
We have footage of him doing that from like the front to the lights are behind him. He's like dripping sweat. He's like spitting on people. Like,
it's so funny.
It's gnarly.
It's so
like
funny.
Some kind of cryptid took over.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And it's so funny because like, I know I don't have that in me to just like let that out and just start yelling at people with no shame.
Right.
Him, he's got all the confidence in the world to be like, I don't care. Let's go in. Like, you know, let's give these people a show. Let's give them something to remember.
Yeah, that can be infectious, man.
Yeah. So it's cool, man. It's great.
Don't ask, tell.
Yeah, don't ask, tell. Exactly.
Aggressively.
Yeah. But it's cool. I feel like that dynamic, you know, and everyone has a different vibe to offer and really is what makes us feel like, you know, we're all allowed to express ourselves to the fullest creatively in our project. And that's something we've always strived to manage to have, and that's just like a good example, like live, how that kind of comes to.
So the juxtapositions in your personalities and things is something that you guys try to play into as a strength.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I feel like that's what makes a band, you know. I mean, there's plenty of great projects where, you know, it's more or less like one person and everyone else is kind of just like hired guns, or maybe they're just friends that are coming in to kind of, you know, support and add to the vibe of that one person's songwriting.
Right.
But for us, we always want to make it feel as collaborative as possible, you know?
Yeah, always an openness to new styles and new things. Like, especially over COVID, I got, like, very into, like, jazz fusion and, like, breakbeaty type stuff, and that found its way into the music just fine. Like, any weird stuff that we kind of pull out ends up kind of
being hard to beat a breakbeat.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, the hardcore kid figured out what jazz is.
Yeah. Let's go.
Uh-oh, who let him on YouTube? Okay, so then that was one thing I wanted to ask you to circle back a little bit. So as you have this time in COVID where you can start to develop your sound a little bit more and you're starting to kind of find out who you might be a little bit more, when you come out of it, did you record a record right away? Or how does the timeline fit with your two your two-part album the way it is?
It was, we were recording before, like, I guess it was kind of opened up, but before things were, like, totally opened up to where we were playing shows again, we were already in the process of recording and getting it done. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was really those first, you know, like we were saying before, like those first few months of, you know, lockdown and all that. It was, all right, well, let's see what we can do to write and just kind of keep things moving and kind of express ourselves, you know, like as we can, as easily as we can.
Right.
And then eventually it got to the point where, okay, well, let's get back together. You know, I know you're not going to kill my grandmother or something. So let's, you know, let's get together. Let's have fun. Let's just try writing music. There's nothing else we can do at this point. And we just started doing that. And there's still some time, you know, where no shows were happening. So like, all right, well, let's just go and record this. Like, that's all that we can really do at this moment. That's what we know is best.
So it was make art or bust.
Yeah. Art or bust. And there was really nothing else to do. I mean, you know, at that point, I mean, you know, you had friends that, you know, kind of just sitting around working jobs from home and everything and, you know, doing what they could. And for us, you know, this is like the job that we do that we don't get paid for. So that was what we were doing, you know. But yeah, we kind of got there. And then Florida was really unique. And I'm sure, you know, maybe it's just our perspective. I'm sure there's many other scenes that were doing the same thing. But
right.
Before venues started opening back up, there was so many house shows going on. And that was really cool because it's like, all right, well, you know, cool place to test the waters of our new stuff and see what works and try out these more DIY spaces. And, you know, for us being where we started out, that's like nothing new. We love those kind of things.
Amen to birth from the hardcore
scene.
Yeah,
man. Yep. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we kind of just one thing led another and we were kind of like, all right, cool. We have a good idea of how we want to release this. And I think, you know, since at that point, it felt like we were kind of starting over again as a band. We didn't want to release a record. So we're like, let's just do the record as, you know, two separate EPs. Like, let's split it up and let's prolong it a little bit and just give that perspective to an audience that like, hey, we're kind of just releasing things as we go. And this is kind of just songs that we've thrown together. And also, that didn't really feel like much of a record at the time. Because it just felt like, you know, a culmination of songs that we were just writing, you know, and hey, this is what we kind of came up with. So
did you feel like your sound was really shifting then? Or since you were a part of it every day, it just seemed like it wasn't. And then when you heard it back, it was like, oh, my God, we've changed a bit.
Definitely a little bit of both. I'll let you speak in a second. But all I got to say is that I totally got way too much of a like unhealthy obsession with like synthesizers at the time, like modular synthesis and all that. And I'm like, that definitely bled a lot into that those two EPs. But yeah, what were you gonna say, dude? I'm sorry.
No,
I wanted to grab that before I forgot.
I think it was pretty obvious again because we had all been kind of workshopping for so long on our own, like just finding what was inspired. Like that was what was important at that time when you were separated, was just like finding what inspired you and kind of honing in on things, getting better. So like,
yeah.
Plus I think we had a lot of qualms with the first record. Not that we, you know, didn't like it, but there was so many little nitpicks of like, oh, this could have been better. This could have been better. Not playing over top of people so much.
Yeah.
Just kind of like locking in and playing what needs to be there and nothing more was like a huge change. So we were ready to go back and hit it hard and kind of be more concise with like our playing and make it more like songs instead of like proggy jam stuff, which was cool, but we knew we wanted to
I think we were also kind of, Luca and I were definitely starting to kind of get into the comfortable position or like, you know, feel comfortable in our shoes as singers and using our voices.
Definitely.
Which even then, those two EPs, like we weren't fully there yet. And
it was a little better.
Yeah, it felt definitely a little better. Definitely. There wasn't as much howling going on in the music.
And you had more than 10 days to get it down.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, you know, it was kind of one of those things. All right, well, this is feeling more developed and more matured. But, you know, anytime you look back at anything you do, I feel like as a musician, you're always like, oh, that could have been better. This could have been done
always.
Better. That, you know, you're always...
We haven't even dropped the new stuff yet.
Yeah, we're still sitting there. And that's another thing, too. It's like, you know, we wrote this record or started the process back in December. So
it's finished now. It's been finished for a few months, and it's just going through the motions of, you know, mix, master, all this. Doing what you need to do to prepare a release. But even then, you know, we're sitting there, and I'm like, I'm ready to just write, you know, a whole new one, you know, and just go at it all over again. Yeah. You know, and that's cool, because it's funny. It's like, whenever you go to release something, you almost have to, like, be excited for it and, like, act like it's new.
Yeah.
Because it is, for other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a delicate line to walk. It's like, okay, I've already had this baby now. You like it? Mm. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you have to be excited. You got to find something that makes it, you know, just exciting for you again. I guess there's new things to always appreciate about, you know, when a release comes around. But a lot of it is, like, trying to find little things that make you stoked to be talking about it to other people and everything, you know?
True. Is the writing process what you guys enjoy most?
Yeah, 100% for me. Yeah.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah.
The recording process too can be pretty fun, but that's very, like, meticulous and kind of like you're locked in a room for a while and lotting over little details and kind of making sure. So that can get tedious, but the creative part of writing is definitely
there is definitely though, like, sometimes in the recording aspect, like, you know, you'll kind of just, like, get an idea as you're kind of creating everything. Even if you do demo something, or if you just take something from the demo into the finals. There is sometimes a moment where you're like, hey, let me try this out. We haven't, you know, we've been working on this song for a couple months. You know, let me just try throwing this weird thing in and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's cool. You know, little, like, moments, like magical moments like that is really what keeps the recording process also feeling creative and feeling just brand new.
Yeah, that's a big thing too, not to let things get stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like being open-minded to one another is the way you guys combat stagnant.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So what do you think the nature is for you individually, or maybe for the two of you together, or all four of you as the group, that you always feel like you've got music to write? I know a lot of artists can feel like after they have their baby, figuratively, you know, they got to chill for a couple of years before the muse brews back up or enough life happens for there's something to write about. What do you think it is about you guys and your creative process that makes you feel like you've always got songs on tap?
I think what you said right there with, like, you know, experiencing life and taking some time away is really important, because being a creative, you need to have something to write about. You need to go out, you need to experience things a little
right.
bit. Because if you're just writing music all the time and just being so much in that headspace of, like, I need to just always write songs, I feel like it's going to start lacking inspiration. It's going to start lacking things that make it special. Because at the end of the day, you know, art is something that comes from, you know, your experience as an individual and as a person. And if you're not doing that portion of it, if you're not doing that portion of your life, your art's not going to have much to say, you know.
Good perspective. Interesting perspective.
Yeah. It's a balance of life and, you know, the other.
Otherwise you feel like you might just tread into the realm of analytical output.
Yeah, exactly. And then it becomes way too, like, technical, you know, you're just writing music because it's a technical thing at that point. Yeah. You know?
Have you ever had that feeling?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Been there, man.
Especially in the process of learning to write music. That kind of is how it is. But
Yeah. And experimenting with ideas. But, I mean, what I always try to do, because I love snowboarding and just going out there. I've been doing it since I was, like, 18. Try to get out there, like, every season. I didn't get to do it last season because we were working on the record.
Good reason.
But that's, like, one of those things where it's, like, you know, Florida boy goes to the mountains and plays around in the snow. It's, like, you know, that's something that's completely out of my realm of, like, what I would do on my day-to-day as, like, a person, and just go out there and see my friend out there and everything and, you know, get to be this other version of myself for a little bit, you know, and just think of things that, you know, would never really pop my brain on a day-to-day basis and, you know, here at home, you know. And I guess, like, that is for any vacation or anything like that, but, you know, just a complete change of scenery and experiencing something that, you know, is not, you know, part of your monotony, I think, is important.
Or even teetering into the realm of comfort zone.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, doing things that make you scared, I think, is really important as well.
Do you guys try to do that when you're writing? Do you purposely push yourselves into places where it's like, man, I don't know if I'm Florida boy in the mountains on this one or what?
I don't know. I mean, I definitely try to chase that feeling of, like, this is new territory.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's since we haven't been in creative mode for so long, it's hard to really
and, you know, been listening back to the things that we've done.
Total different mindset.
Yeah, it's a little bit, you're kind of like looking, you know, at your past self right now, and you're kind of like comfortable with everything that you already did. But I definitely think there is a little bit of that, you know, no doubt you're always trying to be like just enough underwater to where you're like, you know, head's just above water. You're just able to get a breath, you know?
That's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's danger in the comfort zone, I heard, anyways.
There's definitely 100% danger. I've been, because what I do on the side is like teaching, you know, private lessons and all. So I've been getting a lot better at piano lately. And I feel like that's kind of been my thing, just like creatively keep my mind fresh and have fun.
There you go.
And that is definitely something that makes me feel like, all right, this is not my instrument at all, you know, because I started with guitar and then to take it onto piano is like,
well, and vocals in between.
Yeah. Yeah. That too. Or like trying to get good with like singing and piano is like, that's like, you know, your brain's working in so many different ways. Neurons are firing left and right to like try to get, you know, these muscles working properly while also being able to focus on your voice. That feels like I'm drowning a little bit when I do it, you know, but it's cool. It's
in a good way. Vibe.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned something interesting I like to ask people about as well, that you had a body of work that you released as two EPs. And I think that's a really interesting way to do it. I think it's a cool way to not have to break up your material too much.
Mm-hmm.
But we know we're kind of in a world now where you're incentivized to turn and burn singles. How do you guys feel about the way streaming music has incentivized or de-incentivized you to release your product? Do you think about that much, or do you just be able to say to yourself, look, we're breaking into two EPs, that's it, move forward?
I mean, the reason we did the two EPs was so we could release more singles and stretch the release process of it. So it wasn't like single all the way through, but like, I feel like that there's also a benefit to making it a package and also promoting it as the package too.
Yeah.
So like, you can get the best of both worlds by doing some singles and then also having like a pot of gold at the end where it's like, hey, here's the rest of it. But
yeah, I think there's always going to be people that enjoy listening to a body of music, but you know, being musicians, you're probably more, you know, incentivized to like listening to music like that, because, you know, you create music in a sense of like, I'm going to make a body of work. And so I have more of a perspective where I like to go listen to other bodies of work. But I definitely think it's important to be realistic and understand, like, not everybody thinks like that. You got to kind of approach, you know, releasing things as like that single basis. But, you know, you could do a little bit of both. Like Lucas said, kind of making it like a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is important.
I feel like it also has a lot to do with like the writing process and the way that you do your production too. Like if you're just doing writing a single or two, producing those, releasing them, writing, that can be kind of a good way of doing it. But if you're writing, you know, 10 to 12 songs at a time, sometimes you just kind of like get it all out of the way and then you just do the package. And I feel like it just depends on what your writing style can be like.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I also do, though, appreciate, like I said, when there's this whole piece that somebody has put together that, or people have put together that kind of convey this flow of emotion throughout a record.
Right.
And one thing I feel like, you know, with like the resurgence of, you know, pressing vinyl records and all that has come back to is that, you know, you can kind of have the best of both worlds. You know, you can have that, you know, that artist that you're following and they're putting out singles and they're able to generate more buzz online and, you know, generate a little bit more of a following.
Right.
But, you know, maybe for every like one out of four listeners, there's going to be that one person that really likes the whole album, you know. I don't know what the exact, you know, fractions would be or whatever, but
it's clearly the minority.
Yeah.
Even if it's 49-51.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, thankfully, since that is such a huge thing with, you know, I don't know the last time I bought a CD was or anything like that. I don't know anyone who buys CDs anymore, but I definitely still go out and buy records, you know. And so for the ones that I really like the artist or really like the record, all right, cool, I'm going to buy that and listen to in my living room, you know, and on my record player and really appreciate that body of work. So I think there is still definitely a market for people to do full length records and, you know, but you just have to approach it and like, all right, how are you going to corner both ends of, you know, that market or like corner both of those kind of perspectives of a listener, you know?
It is your preference to make a record as artists though, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So do you feel any compromise in having to give the audience the option of the best of both worlds, or once you've made your record, you don't care as long as someone gets to digest it, we're cool?
What, in terms of, like, releasing singles off the bat?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's just a good way to do it if you want to, like, roll out your record and have a good, you know, length of time that you're promoting on it.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I feel like most of the people that we look up to, like, the bands and artists that we kind of want to emulate and kind of, like, take after, that's kind of the way that they end up doing it.
Yeah.
A lot of people you end up seeing doing, like, singles and stuff, it's very, like, social media artist oriented, which is cool. Like, you see a lot of people that get really big followings really quickly doing that, and I think that can be a benefit. But again, if it's not the way that you write and produce your bodies of music, it's kind of hard to, like, force yourself into doing this one way when you appreciate and you enjoy things in the other. So
And I mean, I definitely, if it were up to me, I would love to just go back to only ever worrying about putting out a record every, you know, 2 years
or
so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the conventional 25 years ago, whatever-ish, you put one, two singles out before the record, and here's the record. And, you know, the way movies used to be, you put out a couple two-minute trailers and then the rest of the movie. Now we see all these long trailers.
Yeah.
We get half the album in singles.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder how that feels for the creator. Do you feel like it spoils when they find the pot of gold, or do you feel it makes the pot of gold that much better because they're already half invested?
I think a little bit of both. Something I feel like, which is fun with us, is that since our music tends to always go kind of all over the spectrum of, you know, just vibes and sounds and all, and just styles, doing half of, you know, releasing four or five singles out of, like, a, you know, 10 song record, there's still something that you can find in the record that feels like, oh, this is like a special song. Like, this is something cool, you know? And unfortunately, you know, those might not get as much attention as, like, a single would, but for the person who does really like to go check out the whole thing, like, we try to always craft it to where in our releases that, you know, you're going to find something that would not be, like, single worthy music, you know?
Right.
Like, if there's another, like, we have one that's, that we're ending this record with, its last song. And it's just got this real laid-back feel that we haven't really gone for or really dialed in as much with, you know, our other style of music. Like, almost kind of like an Eagles vibe in some spots. It's pretty, nice. Yeah, it's pretty fun. I really love the way it came out. But, and that's, like, another one of those, like, longer tracks that, you know, like, no shot in hell that we would ever put that out as a single. But for the person who just wants to put that on, you know, or like, put the record on, find that song, and just, you know, that's something that they're going to grow to love. That's something that I appreciate from somebody that has that, you know, perspective of listening to music. Like, that's what you get for being that sort of listener, you know?
Yeah, so your record's got a home for everybody to some degree.
Yeah, that's kind of what I like to think of, you know?
Very cool. Well, you touched on something I wanted to get to, so now's a perfect time. I know at the top I introduced you as an alternative indie rock band because that's what it said on Spotify, and
sure,
I figured I'm safe in that lane.
Yeah, sure.
But I listen to your music, and I know that is for no other way of putting it, that is a generic description at best.
Yeah.
Your styles range quite a bit. So could you talk to me a little bit about what some of your influences are individually, maybe some of your influences as a band, and how you navigate being this melting pot? Because you got a pretty damn good melting pot going.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Beyond alternative indie rock, I would say, but I don't have a better label.
Yeah, no, I mean, neither do we. That's why we just slapped that one on there, because, I mean,
it's accessible.
Yeah, it's accessible. That really, all three of those words mean that it could literally be anything that you're going to hear from it. But I don't know, Luca, what are...
Just, like, influences?
Yeah,
off
influences.
The bat? Dude, honestly, I learned Rush. That was, like, my first... that was my first area of music learning.
Really?
Playing, like, Tom Sawyer on the drums when I was, like, 7.
Yeah.
And then,
damn, deep end.
Yeah, and then it was, like, hardcore music in high school.
Definitely some dad influence there, right?
Oh, for sure. Hey, dad drummer. Jazz, funk, fusion-y type stuff in, like, college. And then from there, like EDM and, like, singer-songwritery stuff, like, everything. It's really weird.
You came in with a mixed bag.
I developed the mixed bag more so after the, but
I feel like my upbringing is not all that unique for as far as musician goes. It's kind of just like, you know, my dad and, you know, mom really liked just playing, like, you know, Beatles for me growing up, and,
you know, my earliest memories are just remember being in the car going to school or something and, you know, put on, you know, Abbey Road or something and just listen to it or like Dark Side of the Moon and, you know, going through all these different ones. My dad was really cool to put on like deep cuts too of like, you know, records like that and, you know, things that you wouldn't always maybe show a kids. You know, he definitely had a little more of an articulate music taste for classic rock, but, you know, that's kind of just where it started. And then it's like, oh, hey, I want to go play guitar. And, you know, eventually one thing led another and you kind of figure out like, oh, there's, you know, hardcore music. That's really cool. Like, you know, go find that. And eventually, you know, you're like, oh, hardcore kid finds jazz, like how we were talking about earlier, know?
And oh, no.
Yeah, that's, yeah, oh, no. Stay in your lane.
Yeah, dude. The jazz people are infuriated right now.
Yeah. So when your songs start to have a more diverse sonic palette, what were you thinking? Were you like, okay, this is our sound, or we need to nail this together, or what?
I feel like it was kind of one of those ways of like, you know, you go into like a heavy scene because you're being that kid that's being a little rebellious, you know, going against like the status quo and everything. Like, I'm not going to go listen to pop music or rap or whatever. I'm going to go listen to hardcore because, you know, fuck the man and all that, you know, like that
against the grain for life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so much of that is like, you know, there's so many good things that you get from hardcore and being, you know, someone that loves that.
Yes.
But I think part of our way of that was like going in, having that rebellious nature and then going into a scene with all this heavy shit. We're like, well, let's rebel a little bit even more and let's write some things that don't feel like you're just screaming at the world all the time, you know? And then I think eventually we're kind of like, well, you know, I really like, you know, Steely Dan and shit, and Allman Brothers and stuff. Like, let's, you know, write some like rock, and then, you know, we're like, oh, you know, there's these cool shoegaze bands and stuff like that, and emo bands, and we're like, let's dig into that a little bit. Like, I think definitely like late high school vibe, like, you know, Tidal Fight and Turnover and, you know, all those bands were huge for us, and seeing those bands come up, like Turnover, I remember seeing right when they were kind of coming up on Peripheral Vision and seeing them at a skate park in Tampa opening up for this band called Pianos Become the Teeth, and there being like 30 people in the room and they just put out Peripheral Vision like the month before, and just seeing that and being like, whoa, that is so cool. And like, you're looking at all everyone in the room and you're like, this is where you go and see, you know, like, you know, deathcore and like, you know, all these crazy, like heavy, heavy bands. And you're
right,
like,
right.
But you know, you have the same crowd that go to those shows sitting in this room right now, listening to like, you know, poppy, like chorusy, like beachy kind of sounding music. And you're like, that's different. Like, there's something going on here. Like, you don't have to. It opens your perspective up a little bit. Like,
I was
going
to say, did that moment kind of give you some permission to color outside the lines more?
I definitely think
so. Or follow the instinct of it?
I mean, I think that area of the scene, like the hardcore scene in like Tampa and whatnot, it was kind of like that from the beginning, at least from when I started there. That's what drew me to it so much was like, you'd go and you'd see like three or four insane heavy bands with people like smashing the mics on their heads and stuff. And in between it would be like female singer-songwriter artists just up there with a guitar, and people would be like crisscrossing the floor.
Shut the lights off. Everyone sit down on the ground.
And
you
then
know?
You'd have like an emo like chill band play in between. Like, it was always pretty open to that type of thing, thankfully.
I remember going into, maybe it was like one of my very first like shows, or like first year of like going out to local music, and seeing our buddy in this band at the time called Orion starting to play, and they were probably one of the only like real locals out of like maybe three other bands that would play in these like heavy shows, and they were just like this weird spacey like prog kind of vibe, like emo prog sort of thing. We're like, that's fucking awesome. Like, I don't see anyone doing that, but you know, Tampa's always had such this like, you know, acceptance to different things, you know, despite the scene, that I feel like it also bred, you know, a lot of different kind of ideas for us, and like different kind of confidence to, you know, take place in trying to figure out our own thing.
Yeah, that's cool. You don't hear that too much. Usually scenes get siloed off.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a little bit of like clickiness for like your sound and in a lot of different music realms. But I think that's also like, you know, if you're an artist at the end of the day, it's like, just do your thing and, you know, people will like it, and or you'll find somebody that you can connect to at least with it.
That's the main thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like no matter what, there's always going to be like the click kind of thing of like, oh, this is what's popping, this is what's cool. But no matter what, if, you know, you're an artist at heart, you know, to be open to ideas and accept different things and, you know, try out different things. And that's why I think the, you know, boxing yourself in or like trying to stick to a sound of a scene never will really work at the end of the day. It's always going to change.
Well, that kind of leads me to my next question. So with your sound as diverse as it is, what are the parts that you kind of honed in and you developed and you're going to put out with this record? And what are some of the things that you're looking forward to? Because it sounds like you guys aren't scared to keep moving and keep broadening horizons.
Yeah.
I think we've kind of talked about this for the future already. I think I know what the vibe is for that. But
yeah,
here, for this record, maybe you have something to say about that real quick.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to going at it from the perspective of, like, let's make sure that everything that we do on this record, we can strip back to just an acoustic guitar and a person. You know, make it feel very song, you know, songwriter kind of vibe. But add everything else in. And, you know, maybe try out different styles, maybe, you know, lay back a little bit. I know we've always kind of had the vibe of, like, let's be loud.
Yeah, let's be crazy. I think since the first record, it's been a consistent thread of, like, trying to get better at, like, tasteful songwriting and not being too much.
Harness the gift.
And I think what he's talking about with that final song and this new record that we're, you know, doing right now, it's like the culmination of, like, okay, this is just laid back and really nice to listen to. This is like a brain massage type deal. But
yeah,
I think we want to now break back out of that a little bit more if possible.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like for when we go into the next record too, I think one thing that was really nice with the first record we did was it was written in a room together, jamming. A lot of us were all together when all the songs were written. And even when we went to go track it, it was actually like, you know, we were actually playing.
Live.
Yeah, it was live. It
just
was live
isolated.
Tracking, just everything isolated. And
awesome. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Me too. That to me is like, that's how you make a record.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a time and a place for it, of course. But when you can do it, it's very cool.
Yeah. The past couple times, or the EPs that we did and this last record, we didn't have the chance to do that as much. And we weren't able to record that exact method, like
just
sitting
based
in a room.
On resources alone, honestly. Yeah, it's hard.
Resources and time. And
it's an apples and oranges thing, too.
Yeah.
You know, you can't halvesy it. It's a one or the other.
No. But him and I, Luke and I, we just moved into a house together and we built our garage into a rehearsal studio space.
Hell yes.
It's like awesome.
Full sent it.
Plenty of room for activities.
Yes. Yeah. Built like acoustic panels. We made clouds and everything. Like, so much fun. It was so cool. You walk in and you're like, this is not a garage anymore. You're like, this is an actual fucking
space to create.
Space.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome.
So I think when it comes to being back into writing mode, we're going to be able to really capture that, like, jam, you know, that vibe of, like, we're sitting in the room together. We're doing this thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really going to help us just lock in even more. And I feel like it's also going to be well balanced because since the first record was so much of that, almost too much of that, and then these past two records, or the EPs and this one that we just did, were more of like, let's try to be better songwriters and vocalists and, you know, vice versa all around. I feel like now we can go back to the roots of, like, let's just get crazy. Let's jam.
Yeah.
But we'll know how to lay off when it's needed and not be overbearing with that vibe.
Yeah. I kind of, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but I think that sounds like the adventure of how do we make simple interesting.
Yeah. 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 How to keep it organic and not overdo things, but also exactly what you said, keep it interesting and, you know, see, like, not add too much to it all at once, but, you know, make sure that you're doing, like, what you're doing in the song has importance as well.
Yeah. You're right, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the thing. Make sure everything serves a purpose instead of just allowing anything to be there.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, being comfortable with negative space in your music, too, is something that we've figured out a little bit more now, which is nice because, you know, sometimes not playing anything at all is the most impactful thing.
Yes, that's a very good point, and that's a trick unto itself. That's the Pink Floyd lesson, though, I guess. Yeah,
definitely.
Talk to me a little bit about that, and then I'll get you out of here on something fun. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I know for a lot of artists, regardless if we're painting pictures or making songs or whatever, the tendency, especially in the beginning, is to try to do everything you can and make sure there's no spot where it looks like you weren't trying or we didn't do our best or whatever. But sometimes silence or absence or negative space can be a thousand times more powerful than being as loud as you can be. But it's a trick to get yourself out of the way to let that happen. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about how you guys evolved to the point where you could let shit breathe a little bit more instead of just straight pounding.
Drummer boy.
I think that was...
you got a good idea on that.
That was the evolution of learning to write better music and also become better and more confident musicians.
Because
when we were writing off the bat... That's it. Especially me, I was not very confident. I was just learning to play to a click. It was like all the notes, everywhere that I can put a note, like I'm going to try to do that because, you know, I want to be a badass drummer, blah, blah, blah. So it was the maturation process of learning to write better music, but not overcompensating in that way, and also getting better on your instrument and having that taste and knowing where it's time to do those things and when you need to let other things have their space and really.
I also think accepting your limitations as a musician. You know, it's always good to try to break through that next boundary of like what I can do that, you know, looks good and, you know, sounds good or, you know, might be impressive. But like sometimes understanding like, hey, that's like a thing of ego. Back off.
Accept there you go.
It, you know, accept what the song is and, you know, allow other people in. And that's something I always love about us as a group is, you know, how we've talked about already is that, you know, allowing other people's perspective to come in. And if they're saying, hey, you're doing too much right there, like just stop, you know, or hey, change up the notes a little bit, like maybe take a few out, less is more, you know, that approach and not getting in the way of yourself is really, I feel like, that best tool that you can have.
That's very powerful advice. Well, I lied. I said I was going to ask you something fun to get out of here quick.
but
I got one in between because you said one of the magic words, ego.
Yeah.
Ego comes up amongst musicians and other artists we talk to quite a lot. And it seems like we're in some kind of paradigm shift away from where, like, all these fevered egos were the gatekeepers and the protectionist holders of the right ways and the wrong ways and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
How did you get to the point, or maybe if you started at the point, explain to me a little bit about the comfortability that you guys have, not feeling that your egos are threatened by one another in your creative process.
I mean, you know, I always like to say that it's about the chemistry that you're with people. You know, for us, we've had that blessing of being able to have a band that's really of just made up of best friends. You know, we've just known each other for so long and we respect each other and trust each other.
Huge.
And,
trust. Yeah. I was going to say trust. Yeah.
Yeah. And knowing how to like kind of make the, you know, get in the way of somebody from kind of overstepping on themselves or, you know, kind of letting their ego inflate. You know, one of us can kind of see like, oh, hey, man, you're getting like either A, too into yourself or A, you're not confident enough. Like,
you know, right. Good
being
point.
Able to keep each other in check, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And because we have that, you know, ground established of, you know, best friends and trust, we can easily kind of respect when somebody has something to say like that.
And not take it personally.
Yeah, and not take it personally. Not at all. I think that's the biggest thing, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's,
also,
it's
like...
It's common that you see that struggle, and I think we just really appreciate that we all get along separate from that in the first place.
Yeah,
sure.
But also, like, having a sense of humor is the best fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I am a sarcastic prick, man. I'm such an asshole.
He beats it in deep into people, honestly. Yeah.
And I mean, that's just something like, I can't help it, like, man. That's an Italian family right there. Like an Italian-American family all from New York. They're a bunch of assholes, man.
Yeah, if you can't bust balls, you're out of the club.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want somebody that can talk, if not just as much, if not more shit than I can talk, you know, around me. And I, you know, I think we all just love that. Like it creates so much fun.
Hell yeah.
You know, and just being able to be like, oh, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Like have fun, you know, don't let your ego get in the way. And I think that sense of humor is something everybody needs to learn to develop a little bit.
That's
hugely
valuable. Hugely valuable. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Now something fun.
Cool. Okay. Lay it on
us. When is this EP coming out?
album, actually.
Yeah.
Full album.
Oh, yeah. Full tracks. That's right.
Yeah.
Album. We're LP status.
Yeah, LP status, baby. Well, actually, so we trimmed some fat. So it's 10 song record. We'll see what happens with the other four. We're kind of just letting them simmer, you know, see if we want to use them. But as far as release, definitely in the new year. Yeah. Which I know, you know, we're in November now, so it's not like that's saying much. But, you know.
Well, this will come out before then, so.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, cool. I don't know. I hope to definitely do something, maybe start putting something out in, like, February. I feel like that's a good time to start out, but definitely going to be going through the motions of the record, you know, doing shows with it and touring with it. Definitely throughout the spring and summer. I think that's our line of sight right now.
Okay, so we're looking spring next year for an album release party, and or somewhere around there.
Spring, early summer, late summer, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, some somewhere around.
I
there.
Won't nail you to a date. Yeah. That part's all ancillary to the question, anyways.
Yeah,
I like to ask bands this question not to necessarily see who their favorite bands are or what you know they'd like to be the nearest to, but what you see this body of work you're going to be releasing most favorably set with. So if you could pick two bands to play with you on the CD release or your album release party, CD, that dates me, your album release party for this record, to debut this record to the world, who would you have with you?
Luca, you want to say?
No.
Dude, I have no idea yet. I'll say, like, I had such a good time with the dudes in the Moss when we were playing with them. I know they're off doing their thing. And
it's a hypothetical world. You can bring the Beatles back if you want to.
They're a much bigger band, but I got to say, like, right now, that was the most fun we'd had touring in such a long time. So I'm always happy to do anything with them ever again. There's another band that I've been really vibing with lately, too. That's out of Seattle. It's called Deep Sea Diver. And they're definitely, like, doing, you know, what they are all capable of doing. Like, I think they were just opening up for, like, Pearl Jam or something.
Nice.
Like, yeah, it's awesome, man. It's this solo songwriter, and her husband is the drummer, but her name's Jessica Dobson, and she writes some of the coolest shit I've heard in the longest time.
Very, like, cool.
Such a unique sound. So I would love to, you know, play a show with them or something. That'd be so sweet. But yeah, unfortunately, that's a band that's all the way in, you know, the exact opposite side of the continental U.S.
Yeah.
So
that's all right. This is fantasy world. You make the rules.
Absolutely.
We can teleport in this world.
Yeah. Close my eyes, click my heels a few times, you know?
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. I don't even know if I can answer that, honestly. That's hard.
Yeah. Anything, man.
Oh, Tame Impala.
Tame Impala, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck it.
It's weird because the amount of time I spend listening to music that's, like, directly adjacent to ours is not a lot. It's mostly spent in those other weird areas. So to, like, pick from it and be like, oh, these are the bands that we should be playing with, it's kind of hard. Yeah. I feel
or
like he has a
maybe,
better perspective
maybe
on that.
Maybe enlighten or inspire the audience on what was some of the impetus behind the body of work you did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if it's one of these left field groups that you listen to, that might be a great way to get ready for people to hear what you're about to do.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. I mean, what do you think? Come on, you got to get at least one more in, bro. Got to at least
left
go
field
for another.
Is fair.
Citizen.
Citizen. Yeah, Citizen is one of those bands that was kind of in that ethos of the hardcore realm as well, like with Turnover and Title Fight, and, like, we've been seeing them for ages, man. I mean, they're the coolest.
So cool.
They're the fucking dudes.
Family affair, man.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you guys enough for coming down.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate you being here. I can't wait to hear the new material. I like the old material. And you guys are K the family now, so you are always welcome.
Woo.
If you want to do a deep dive on your record, you got anything coming up, we always got a home for you to come and talk.
Cool, man.
So,
sweet.
Nick and Luca, I'm so grateful you're coming down. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, bro.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good time.